you have to look at those numbers as a way to see what really is going on inside the body and understand how things are working and where things are not working or what is going wrong.
Yeah.
It's numbers are just, think of this, numbers are just our guide. That's it. Okay, so the point is not what's the perfect reference range or what's the perfect number. That's not the point. The point is to understand what really is going on. And that's what we mean by how you can really learn to access your own thyroid labs, your results. Once again, how are y'all doing? And before we get started, I'd just like to say this one thing. We are not licensed medical professionals, and neither do we intend to, or neither we do this. We don't diagnose, treat, cure anyone. And this specifically, since we're going to talk about labs, this is not about diagnosis. So please try and understand, this is just an educational webinar. So if there's anything, go to your own physician and get it checked and all. This is just for your educational purposes. It's just for you to understand things. So always listen to your physician at the end of the day. And with that, let's get started. Okay, so as long as lab value is within range, it's fine. You know, that's exactly what everyone thinks. But is it really the truth? It's nowhere close to the truth. The thing is that, as I also previously mentioned in the last episode, hormones are released in a pulsatile fashion. So it's not constantly released in, you know, a continuous manner. And every time it's released in this pulsatile fashion, the quantity can dramatically be different. And so for that reason, think about this, that labs are just a picture taken at some point of time, a picture of your physiology, of what's happening in your blood or whatsoever. And if you are trying to gauge what your health is like just by looking at this piece of paper and reading those numbers, I really don't think that's a great idea. It's more like you went for a vacation and you have one picture that you clicked on a vacation, which of course is not possible, but let's say you did, hypothetically. And now you're trying to, you show this picture to your friend and say, hey, look at this picture I took on my vacation. What do you think about my vacation? How did it go? You think that your friend can come any close to telling you how your vacation must have been?
Yeah.
Not at all, right?
Yeah.
So labs are not your report cards, your health report cards. Please remember that. They are just one piece of information. One piece of the puzzle. And this piece is not supposed to outweigh your own intuition and what you are feeling, as in your symptoms, right? So if you're feeling something, if you're feeling unwell, and the lab reports are not, or actually the numbers are quote unquote not showing it, then it really doesn't matter, right? Because you know that you are not feeling well.
Yeah.
And you need to look somewhere. You need to look for the problem. You need to dig in more. So labs are just a tool of, just one small tool to maybe gauge what's really happening. But at the end of the day, always remember, it's what matters more is making those changes and focusing more on the solution rather than, you know, going on analyzing and digging in. And God, that's not going to result in anything at the end of the day, right? Okay. So there are other factors that can affect your lab results. So first things first, that remember before we move ahead, that labs are not your perfect Even when we talk about that picture taken like in your vacation, it's still not that perfect. That will show up everything that was happening during that period of time, because there can be errors, of course, because you know, I mean, it's done by humans, and humans is equals to, I mean, we cannot eliminate error in totality. So, and there are other factors that can influence your physiology when you are going for the test. Let's say you're going for your blood draw right in the morning before, let's say, going to work, right? You told your boss you're going to be at work at 10 a.m. and now you just left home at like 9. You know, your kids were driving you crazy. You know, you faced a lot of traffic.
Yeah.
You're freaking stressed out. Oh my God, how the hell am I going to go? I need to get the blood drawn. And then how am I going to reach early?
Yeah.
My boss is going to shout at me, blah, 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 blah. So your stress levels are through the roof. So what do you think is happening? It's completely changing your physiology, right?
Yeah.
At that point of time. And let me tell you this. If you have your blood drawn and the results and tested like 3 times a day, at three different points during the day, you do that morning, afternoon, evening, whatsoever, or within a span of even a week, the results can be dramatically different.
Yeah.
Always remember that. And like I said, it's not just your stress levels, but also what you ate, probably even the night before, is really going to make a difference. And I think you were mentioning that.
Yeah, I mean, there are a few factors before you go and get your thyroid testing. The first thing is that you shouldn't have medications like your T4 and T3. Because especially with T3, it can actually suppress your TSH levels. So on the paper, it might look like you have less low TSH, but in actuality, that's not the case. And you're still having symptoms of hypothyroid where TSH is a bit more elevated. So that's one. Even with biotin supplements, even that suppresses TSH levels as well. And you always need to go having a fast.
But remember, like generally they say fasting liquids are fine. And when people say liquids, they're having coffee in the morning before going to
the
lab
test. That would again increase your cortisol levels. So please don't do that.
Just
have
water.
Some water.
Just water, please remember.
Yeah, and do it before like 10 o'clock in the morning. So you would also get accurate results for your TSH.
Yeah.
So just like few things you need to take care of. So you don't need to have your biotin 3 days before testing. And 1 day before testing, you should also... Now, in the morning, you won't be having your thyroid hormone or your medication, because that's what doctors generally recommend you to have it early in the morning. So take it with you at the clinic, and then after testing, have it then.
Yeah. In short, just discuss the medication part out with your doctor.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's move on. And I will briefly tell you all how the whole the physiology works, like how does the whole thyroid hormone thing works. Before we get on to analyzing, because I'm not analyzing, assessing, because unless you don't understand this, you probably will be clueless when we talk about that. And trust me, this is very easy. Just give it like 5-7 minutes. Okay. So there is a part in your brain, which is called the hypothalamus, right? And that's where the point where it starts, it all starts from, at least for the time being, as whatever we know. Hypothalamus signals the pituitary and says, hey, please do your thing. Please ask the thyroid to make some hormones. And how does it tell the pituitary? It has a messenger, and that messenger is called thyroid releasing hormone, or TRH, the short form. And then once the pituitary gets that signal, then the pituitary says, yeah, okay, I'll just tell the thyroid, I'll just inform him. So he tells the pituitary, not he or she, the pituitary tells their messenger, he or she, I don't know. So I'll just say their messenger that, hey, and the messenger is TSH, which is so common, right? That's the one that's always tested by, you know, your physician. So TSH means thyroid stimulating hormone. Simple. It's not very technical, right? It's, as the name suggests, to stimulate the thyroid hormone. Once the thyroid hormone receives the TSH knocking on its door, then
it's the thyroid gland. So once the thyroid gland receives the TSH signal, that's when it starts producing T4 and T3.
And mind you, majority of which is T4, 93% almost, more or less, and around more or less 7% is T3. And most of the T3, the thyroid gland wants to keep for itself. And by the way, how is the thyroid hormone, basically, T4, T3, and your calcitonin and T1 and T2 and et cetera, et cetera. How all that is made? It's made by this one very hardworking worker, which is located in the thyroid gland, and that worker is called TPO. Yeah. And this worker, it's an enzyme. And he uses, And this worker uses a tool which is called iodine, right? To make the thyroid hormone. So imagine this, if there is no iodine, well, the worker doesn't have any tool, right?
That's true.
Yeah, simple as that. So once the thyroid gland makes its T4 and T3, we are just going to talk about T4 and T3, just leave out the rest. Then what happens is now most of the T3, as I mentioned, it keeps for itself. Now the T4 needs to go to the cells so that the cells can, because T4 is an inactive form of thyroid, right? It needs to be activated. And the way it can be activated is it needs to go to those cells that have the mechanism to activate it. And the way it goes to the cells, it needs a ride. Think about, it needs a taxi. And that taxi or that ride is called the thyroid binding globulin, TBG, right? Mm-hmm. That's the taxi. And so the inactive T4 thyroid hormone hails a taxi, tells them that they want to go to the cell, and then the taxi drives them. And when they sit in the taxi, they are bound. And when they are outside the taxi, they are
free or unbound.
Or unbound. Remember that. When they're inside the taxi, they are bound. When they are not inside the taxi, when they're standing outside, they are free or unbound. Okay, now let's move on. So this taxi, once it reaches the cell, it drops off the T4 in most cases.
Yeah.
And that's how it's supposed to happen, but not necessarily the case. So then now, just because it's there doesn't mean it's inside. So it has to knock on the door of the cell. And the way that happens is by the door of the cell is the, I just forgot
the cell membrane.
The cell, no, the not the cell membrane. It's the, I'll get to it. Anyway, so it has to knock on the cell, and the cell has to open the door. That's the thing. If the cell does not open the door, well, it's just stranded outside. Okay, anyways, now the door opens.
The other receptor functioning has to
receptor, she said. Yeah. The receptor. So it has to latch onto the receptor, right? Mm-hmm. So think about latching to the receptor as knocking on the door. I'm just simplifying it for you all guys, okay? So once it enters inside, then it has to be served. It has to be converted. And in most cases it is, but here's the thing. It's not always going to be converted into the active form. It can also be converted to the inactive form,
which is reverse T3.
Exactly. And then once that is done, then it's again, now it's activated. Now it again has to, go out of the cell. Let's say T4 is activated into and it turns into the T3. Now T3 again has to hail a taxi, get inside, get bound again, and then the T3 has to travel to the rest of the body, the rest of the cells, and that's how the metabolism is regulated. As simple as that. Okay, that's how it works. Now, Julie, you can go ahead.
Yeah, so let's do some thyroid labs, and I would be giving you some numbers over here. And after that, we'll be obviously discussing about the dysfunction that keeps happening. And that's the pattern of dysfunction that you need to look into when you're actually assessing your labs. So the first one is the TSH, of course. As you know, this is a pituitary hormone that responds to low or high amounts of circulating thyroid hormone. And this lab reveals elevated TSH in people who have advanced Hashimoto's or primary hypothyroidism. And patients feel best when it's a TSH between 0.5 to 2 micro international units per milliliter. Then comes the free T4. Now, free T4 is actually high in cases of hyperthyroidism, but it's low in cases of hypothyroidism. So the optimal range for free T4 is between 15 to 23 picomoles per liter. Then comes your free T3. Now that's the active hormone. And this actually gets inside the cell for cellular metabolism, powering your mitochondria and generating the ATP. And the optimal range for this one is between 5 and 7 picomoles per liter. Then comes your reverse T3. Now, reverse T3, in a healthy body, everyone has reverse T3. It's normal. But when the conversion from T4 to reverse T3 is increased, that means the body is trying to get into a protective mechanism in situations where we do need reduced metabolism, because that's desirable and you want to avoid catabolism.
Catabolism means a breaking down
of glucose, amino acids, and fatty acids.
It's in short, catabolism is when the body uses its own reserves, and anabolism is when it puts together its reserves or stores it. Simple as that.
So especially, you know, catabolism in patients who are critically ill or are starving. So in that case, reverse T3 could be extremely high in overt autoimmune hyperthyroidism. That's your Graves disease. And the optimal we have to look into is like from 11 to 18 nanogram per deciliter. The next comes is your antibodies, which is TPO. It has to be less than 2 international units per milliliter. And it's an enzyme which helps to produce, as Arjun also mentioned before, the thyroid hormone. But this antibody is high because there is a lack of tolerance, where the immune system goes and starts attacking its own thyroid hormone, its own thyroid gland, because it flags it as a foreign invader.
Can I button for a second?
Yeah.
Okay. So here's the thing. There has been new research that in most cases of thyroiditis, autoimmunity, there could be a viral infection, a chronic viral infection in play. And actually what the body is trying to do is trying to get rid of it. And generally the virus, you know, it hides at different parts or different organs or different mm-hmm. regions of the body. And sometimes it's just around there. And that's when the body is actually fighting against the infection. And the spillover happens into the, like, the gland.
Yeah.
Or the organ.
Yeah.
And that's when they quote unquote say autoimmunity. Because personally, it's my personal view that I find it really hard to believe that the body is dumb enough to attack itself. So far, yeah. With whatever we have learned, there is hardly a point, I mean, apart from this autoimmunity, where I've actually come across, you know, the body trying to do something to hurt itself. Yeah. Because the body is always trying to survive. Sure, there might be some cases where the body is trying to survive and it might end
great stress,
and that's kind of a fault, because, and that's suffering, right? But the body's keeping itself alive,
and that's what's most important.
Exactly. Also, the second thing can be that, now I doubt this, okay, but this is what I've learned, and there are there's also a molecular mimicry at times that goes on, especially, let's say, not always the case, but let's say there is, due to leaky gut,
yeah,
there is some undigested food that enters the bloodstream, or there is some, not necessarily food particle, but it can be any bacteria, anything, right? So in short, the body mistakes, and it just looks like some organ or gland,
yeah,
some particle of it, like some molecular structure of it, and the body mistakes it for, you know, it looks like that, so maybe, you know, the gland is made up of this, seems like, okay, it could be that, and then it starts attacking it. but I'm highly skeptical about it.
And even after you do a thyroidectomy, even after you remove the thyroid gland, yes, you can reduce your antibodies, but that doesn't mean that you're stopping autoimmunity from happening.
Yeah.
And that's what we need to remember, that there is an underlying issue behind this. So it will just find another target.
Yeah.
So let me continue over here. So now this is a pure case of Hashimoto's, where you actually see elevated levels of antibodies with TPO. And this can actually happen 5 to 10 years before you can see an elevation in your TSH. And another marker is your thyroglobulin antibody. And this thyroglobulin, it's actually an intermediary protein in the thyroid hormone production pathway. And this can also be flagged by the immune system if there's an excess of iodine causing hyperthyroid symptoms such as anxiety, agitation, heart palpitation. Thus, even in this case, as you know, we just discussed, immune system is again destroying the storage protein and letting the thyroid hormone spill over or run amok. And that's where it's again a case of Hashimoto's. Now, moving on to also patterns of dysfunction, which is the main thing that today we are actually talking about.
Yeah. And like Juhi just discussed all the numbers with you all, but now remember, it's this now what she's going to speak about that's important for y'all to realize what's actually happening in the background. And these numbers are just your guides. Okay, they are not, as I said, they are not the your
like a report card.
Yeah, exactly. They're it's not for ranking you in any way or telling you how well you're doing. Okay, this is just so that you understand what's happening in the background. Please continue. Yeah.
So now in terms, like in the overt, now since you have hypothyroidism and it could be an overt one, like just the primary one, where you have elevated TSH, but your free T4 and free T3 is normal and low. But you do need to check antibodies in this case, because this can be a pattern coexisting with Hashimoto's. So if it's primary hypothyroidism, then changing the diet to a more anti-inflammatory diet would be very beneficial and maybe can put a person into remission. So you need to do a bit more digging in. The next one is where the pituitary is hypofunctioning, where it's below 1.8, your TSH, because it's a lot of stress that pituitary is going through and it gets exhausted over time. So it cannot produce TSH, and it so that it can, you know, knock on the door of the thyroid gland to produce that T4 and T3. But in this case, T4 and T3 is optimal and your TSH is below 1.8. And another reason also could be that the postpartum, as you know, with pregnancy, it's a lot of pressure on pituitary and on hypothalamus. So with a lot of pressure, a lot of demands for the hormones, suddenly after pregnancy, it wants to slow itself down for some time, for 3 to 6 months. But then it goes back again up. And it's like you are with, and also there's another one where we also look at inappropriate thyroid medications.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's also bombarding the body with a lot of T4 and T3. And that can shut down the doors of the cell in the thyroid.
Resistance to take
the thyroid hormone. And over time, the connection also between the thyroid and the pituitary is lost. So now the pituitary thinks that you do not need any more thyroid.
Mm-hmm.
So it stops producing TSH.
Yeah. And then, you know, that's looked upon as a problem, but it's not a problem. It's a reaction.
Yes. And another pattern of dysfunction is where the conversion from T4 to T3 is not optimal. So here the TSH would be normal. Even free T4 would be normal, but your free T3, the conversion from T4 to T3 is low. And this may coincide with even reverse T3 high, that could be high in some cases.
So for example, over here, as you can see, upstream, everything is going well.
Yes.
The signaling and everything and thyroid is also producing its T4 and T3. But now since, now since reverse T3 is high, that means the cell is, the T4 is entering the cell.
Yeah.
But there is a reason why the cell is converting
it's
it.
It's not converting into
It's not converting. Yeah, it's not activating it technically.
Yeah, it could be because of high stress. It could be because of high cortisol hormone production or some kind of inflammation toxicity.
Yeah, simple as that. Mm-hmm.
And that can be hampering this conversion. So there is this lipid peroxidation that damages the cell walls, the cell membrane. And that doesn't allow the conversion to happen because the conversion happens at the cell membrane.
Yeah. Close to it, not outside it. Okay. Yeah. It has to be inside.
Inside, definitely. So therefore, for good conversion, we do require healthy cell membrane and balanced cortisol production.
Yeah.
So let's move on to another one. The another pattern.
I keep getting the thing that I should say something, but then of course I don't want to overshoot. We have already kind of overshooted. We plan to finish in 20. But it's fine. Just
okay. Okay. So yeah, I mean, we just have 2 points more. Then there's another pattern where it's relating to hypothyroidism is where you have normal levels of TSH, but you have high free T3 and high free T4, and with your thyroid binding globulin. Which is your, and this actually increases when we have more testosterone.
Yeah.
You know, that is more androgen hormones with those androgen creams, testosterone creams people apply, or people even consume steroids, or they are on glucocorticoid medications, or there's some kind of liver or kidney damage or dysfunction that's happening, or insulin resistance. There's so many causes that, we have this pattern of dysfunction where you have high free T3 and a free T4, but your TSH levels are very normal. So this is because the testosterone is high in the body, your cells, they become resistant and thus again not allowing free T3 and free T4 inside the cell, and therefore ensuing hypothyroid symptoms.
Exactly.
And the last one is actually the opposite with this one, where you have elevated levels of your thyroid binding globulin because you have high estrogen.
Yeah.
And where there is high TBG because of estrogen, because estrogen is actually a heaty proliferative hormone, and thus with a high TBG, you cannot have high free T4 or even normal levels of free T4 and T3 because, you know, because it's high TBG, so they will be binding. It's a thyroid binding globulin. It's a thyroid binding protein.
Yeah.
So they are binding to these free circulating hormones in the bloodstream. So then that means we have free T4 and free T3 lower.
Yeah, just think about this. That they are the taxi driver shoving the T4 in the taxi and not letting them out, locking them inside.
Yeah, true. So these are some of the ways you look at that what's happening. So here the problem is estrogen. So we need to clear the estrogen from the body.
So I hope and believe that you're understanding the picture, you know, what's going on, because either it's something to do with the messengers. And that also is affected by the signal that the gland is receiving, or something is happening at the gland, maybe toxicity or whatsoever. Or there is something happening with the conversion. Maybe iodine is not there, so the TPO can't do its job. Or maybe, you know, the immune system is like kicking it off, attacking it in a way, like it's not exactly attacking, but as we discussed.
Yeah, but then in Hashimoto's, you shouldn't be taking iodine because that's like putting gasoline on fire.
Yeah. Or they can also be factors influencing the transport system.
Yeah.
You know, the taxi, the TBG.
TBG.
And with the T4 and all. Or something can be happening inside the cell. Or the cell is not opening the door. See, there are so many factors. So next time when you look at the labs, think about the story, what's going on, right? So I hope you all found this useful. We overshoot. We tried to finish it in 20, yeah. But I think it's kind of a complex topic and we wanted to just cover
all the
possible combinations, you know, yeah. And Julie really worked hard on it. And it's funny because, you know,
actually next time we would be definitely talking about the factors which about these things a bit more in depth.
Okay, let's just in the next episode we'll be talking
the root causes of these of this pattern of dysfunction that's happening.
Well, that was a spontaneous decision, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so the next episode you want us to discuss the root cause factors in a little more depth and a little more
yeah, I mean, also giving you all some recommendations from our side that what can be done, especially one thing with hypothyroidism or with any kind of problem, in short, always try to keep a very clean diet.
Yeah.
Or like anti-inflammatory diet.
Let's discuss that in the next episode, as we'll go on for another half. Yeah. And bore you all to death. Anyway, so hope you all have enjoyed this episode, or if not enjoyed, at least understood, and hope you have found this useful. Until next time, take care.
Take care.
Be healthy. Be happy. See y'all.